Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, January 21st, 2019. Two civilians are dead after a UN peacekeeper opened fire in what the UN describes as a security incident.
UNMISS promptly informed the South Sudan National Police Service of the incident. The mission is taking steps to establish the facts of what happened at Doropey and has convened a review team comprised of representatives from UNMISS Force, Police and Security Services.
Kenyan authorities have made more arrests in connection with last Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi.
We are alert and we remain alert 24/7. We are on duty 24/7 to serve our people, to ensure that our country remains secure and safe.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. UNMISS issued a statement this morning confirming that two civilian contractors working under UNMISS were shot dead over the weekend by a peacekeeper at its base in Doropey West. The UN runs in this area a protection of civilians or POC site sheltering thousands of civilians who fled their homes when conflict broke out in Juba in December 2013. Francesca Mold is the UNMISS spokesperson.
During a security incident at a base operated by the United Nations mission in South Sudan in Juba on Saturday, two civilian contractors were shot by a peacekeeper and died as a result of their injuries. UNMISS promptly informed the South Sudan National Police Service of the incident.
Mold says the peacekeeping mission is investigating the incident and expressed regret for the action.
UNMISS promptly informed the South Sudan National Police Service of the incident. The mission is taking steps to establish the facts of what happened at Doropey and has convened a review team comprised of representatives from UNMISS Force, Police and Security Services. UNMISS deeply regrets the loss of life and is providing support to the families of the two men who died.
UNMISS did not reveal the identity of the two slain civilians and did not provide further details on the circumstances leading to their deaths at the base where thousands of civilians are sheltering. Major General Daniel Justin Bola, spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, confirmed the two dead contractors are South Sudanese and says it is unfortunate that civilians have been killed by a peacekeeper.
We are already involved in the matter. Let them be patient. Yes, it is very tragic and very harmful situation. They are to bear it with us, and I also send my condolences to their families, but I'm urging them to just wait for what we are doing.
Bola says it is the first time a peacekeeper has killed a civilian working at a UN base.
Cases of death we have not received, but sometimes we share information with the UNMISS in regard to some crimes being committed in the POCs. They used to report this to us, and we have a problem in that area because sometimes they keep the criminals without taking any legal steps against them. So we have been urging them such that if there is a case in the POCs, it is our mandate to follow it up, open a case against the criminal or the suspects, and then we investigate and take it to the court. But this thing have not been happening.
Bola is asking UNMISS to cooperate with the police as they investigate the matter. Our thanks to reporter Demo Silva Aurelio, who prepared that story in Juba. Local leaders and witnesses say unidentified gunmen abducted more than a dozen civilians in Yei River County of Yei River State last week. The Yei River State acting governor is appealing to the kidnappers to unconditionally release all the abductees. Daniel Friday Martin files this report for VOA from Yei.
Though the 13 civilians were abducted from Sopir and Kele village on Thursday last week, information about the incident only reached the state capital last night due in part to the four-mile distance between Ye town and the two villages. Two of the abductees were released last night. One is a 50-year-old man who prefers to be identified only as Mule for fear of reprisals from the gunmen.
They found me in the middle of my farm. As I was preparing the land for the next planting season, they ordered me to join them and took me into the bush. They took me together with my hose and told me to dig my own grave. And I told them, I don't have the energy to dig a grave. They threatened to kill me and took me up to a place called Goja. They canned me 30 strokes and injured my leg.
The other released abductee is a woman who prefers to bed and fight only as Kiden. She says the women were not mistreated.
They took us into the bush, but the good thing is that they did not beat us. We were given food to eat and given a room in which to sleep. We left all our crop harvest in our farms due to fear. We want peace so that we can move freely.
Both Mule and Kiden says the gunmen released them at midnight on Sunday. They say the men still hold 11 villagers. 26-year-old Lilias Roba says her husband is among those still held.
Since
he was abducted, I have been sad and I feel unwell. I'm pregnant and nobody is helping me to take care of my children. I'm calling on the armed men to forgive my husband and consider my suffering and release him unconditionally.
Some of the villages around Ye Town are under the control of the government forces, while others are under the control of the SPLA-IO. The rest are under National Salvation or NAS forces. Colonel Lampol Gabriel, the SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman, accuses National Salvation Front forces, led by General Thomas Cirillo, of abducting the civilians.
There is no way we can abduct civilians. Where are we going to take them? We are not recruiting. Whoever is abducting civilians, these are people who want to continue recruiting so that they have forces. And we know Thomas Force is very active in Ye. Whoever is doing this, whether it is under NAS, whether it is under PDM, as long as they are those who are opposed to the peace agreement, they are under the command of General Thomas Cirillo. So we know that is Thomas doing that.
So Basam Elmanas is the spokesman of the National Salvation Front. He accuses the SPLA-IO and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, of abducting the civilians.
That is an abduction and killing of a civilian of South Sudan. That is not our objective. That is not our mission. I want to tell the honestly that the majority of them are SSPDF and IO. So if there is a combination of kidnapping and killing of civilians, these are the two forces that people must fall in hands with. But however, we as a National Salvation Front, we are committed to the Section of Facilities Agreement, which allows for the safety and movement of certain civilians as well as access to the humanitarian corridors in South Sudan.
But Santo Domech, the SSPDF deputy spokesman, denies government forces abducted civilians and says it is investigating the incident.
In fact, we have the same information that some of the civilians were abducted by a group of armed people which are not yet identified in Ye River State. And we don't know yet who have abducted them. The SSPDF, of course, cannot abduct anybody. This is a regular army, this is a government army, and it is there to protect the civilian with their properties. So we are still to find out who have abducted those people.
Yusto Baba Dima, the acting governor for Ye River State, is asking the unidentified gunmen to unconditionally release the civilians.
We are calling for our brothers, those who have acted with their own will to abduct citizens. Let them ensure that this are not foreigners, they are citizens of this state, this nation. They should be released unconditionally. They should be left free to come and exercise their living in their areas.
The River Talas Peace Agreement, signed last year, requires all the parties to allow free movement of civilians. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
Kenyan authorities have made more arrests in connection with last Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi. Meanwhile, Kenyan officials are vowing to prevent further attacks. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA.
Kenya's top security agencies met in the coastal city of Mombasa to discuss ways to improve security and prevent attacks by militant group Al-Shabaab. The Islamist extremist group claimed responsibility for the attack on the Dusit D2 hotel and office complex that killed at least 21 civilians. Speaking at the conference, Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said Kenyan forces are ready to repulse any attack.
We are alert and we remain alert 24/7. We are on duty 24/7 to serve our people, to ensure that our country remains secure and safe. And anyone who bets on attempting to disrupt our peace got some answers last week, and will get many more answers if they try as we go along.
Kenyan officials say police and army troops killed all five gunmen who attacked the Dusit complex. Since then, authorities have arrested at least 11 people in connection with the attack. including four suspects who surrendered to police Monday in the eastern town of Isiolo. Dozens more have been brought in for questioning. Authorities acknowledge that Al-Shabaab continues to pose a threat. A sub-county police commander, Garissa County, Aaron Ombeo, says security officers stopped a suspected terrorist attack on a construction site.
We had these incidents whereby a known number of attackers attempted to enter into construction sites. That is the construction of the road between Garissa and the Mondogashi. Unfortunately, as they were attempting to get in the premises, they shot at a female. She's stable. She's undergoing treatment at the Garissa. Security officers guarding the facility, they had to respond to the action that the attackers fled to a known destination. We are still out there looking for the attackers.
Nairobi-based security expert Richard Tuta says Al-Shabaab is taking advantage of Kenya's political freedoms to operate. He says the country needs to strike a balance between freedom and national security.
Kenya is a country that upholds the rule of law. The moment you hear of a country being an open political system, it is a fact that some fundamental aspects of the human right are so much respected, including but not limited to the fact that the right to privacy, that is, and at the moment there is the aspect of right to privacy, freedom of media, all these things, they serve as a conducive, they give an enabling environment for the operation of a terrorist organization.
Kenya continues to be on high alert, and security has been heightened in areas where Al-Shabaab is suspected to be recruiting youth and might have sleeper cells. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new film about reconciliation aims to help build bridges among South Sudanese. Stay tuned for details on that story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself, pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Sudan protests have crossed the one-month mark, making this round the longest since Sudan gained its independence. I was at a diaspora-led protest in front of the Sudan embassy in Washington on Friday, where demonstrators tell me they have been brought together by a sense of solidarity with loved ones back home, and they have no intention of slowing down until their demands are met. One month after protests in Sudan began, demonstrators say they are more defiant than ever.
I feel this is it, and this is the time for them, and they will go sooner or later.
Protests triggered by a dire economy have rocked Sudan for weeks, evolving into demands for the country's 75-year-old president, Omar Hassan Ahmad al-Bashir, to step down. Sudanese native Roa Kodi participated in Khartoum's protest in September 2013, where dozens of people died. She was in Khartoum last month when the current round of protests began. And she says this round of protests, now the longest since Sudan gained independence in 1956, feels different.
People used to push us out of their houses. not to welcome us in their houses. But what I see, what I saw this time in the streets, people are welcoming us, people giving us water, people providing food, people even providing first aid. They prepared themselves the night before so they be ready for injured people.
She says there is a strong sense of solidarity among Sudanese that has helped energize demonstrators seeking change. Cody, who now lives and works in Virginia, just returned to the U.S. and took part in a diaspora-led protest outside Sudan's embassy in Washington, D.C. There, she told VOA's South Sudan in Focus that Sudanese security forces in Khartoum fired tear gas at protesters, and she saw one protester get shot in the head. Sudanese native Iman Yusuf, who has lived in the United States for more than 20 years, is moved to tears at the thought of her loved ones back home.
I'm so angry. I would like to express my feeling that my people have been killed by the government, by this dictator, and we would like to support them from here. And we are here actually to express our voice to this government that we don't need them no more. They have to move. They have to go. They should not be in the regime no more.
You're crying right now. I see tears dripping from your eyes.
Yes, because they kill youth. They kill young people. They kill doctors who are taking care of the protesters.
Stop killing protesters in Sudan.
Amnesty International estimates more than 40 people have died and more than 1,000 arrested in Sudan. The government says the death toll is closer to 24. President al-Bashir and his government have been defiant, blaming the rise of protests on foreign agents. Protesters say they will not stop until their demands are met. Meanwhile, Mo Ibrahim, a Sudanese-British billionaire and the founder of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, says a month of deadly protests across Sudan represents a total rejection of President Omar al-Bashir's 30-year rule. He spoke with VOA about what the unrest says about the state of the country and what might happen next.
People just got fed up. Their life is almost impossible. Failed policies. Aggressive posture of the government. We had wars in the south. We declared jihad in our citizens and ended up splitting the country. They had the massacres in Darfur. And the economic side, I mean, the people are hungry. And they see the looting of the country resources by the ruling clique. Just people had enough.
Your foundation has called on the Sudanese government to respect the rights of civilians to peacefully assemble and protest, but it has also condemned the arrest of opposition figures and censorship of the press. What's your message to the government?
Really, enough is enough. And abuse of human rights will not just pass. I mean, they will be held accountable. If Bashir escaped the International Criminal Court for a number of years, he and his people will not escape justice forever.
What needs to happen next?
I think we need the international community to stand up and to show some moral backbone. Media in large has been quite silent about what's going on. All those people are being killed daily in Sudan. And the level of reporting is just incredibly low.
As you look at the democratic landscape of Africa, there are signs of difficulty in places like Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo, but there are also positive signs in places including Ethiopia. How do you assess the state of democracy on the continent right now? And are things moving in the right direction?
We are 54 countries. And inevitably, we have a handful of countries where we have difficulties. We have difficulties in Sudan. We have difficulties in South Sudan. We have difficulties in DRC. Although at least the fact that we managed to have an election there, that's a step forward. How credible is that election? It's yet to be seen. But there's a lot of positive things happening in Angola, in Botswana, in Namibia, in Ghana, and I will hope in Nigeria, which will have elections soon. I hope we can also see peaceful elections. But I think the battle now is moving towards peaceful elections, more transparency. I am optimistic, and I think we're moving forward. Unfortunately, not in my country.
That was Sudanese billionaire Mo Ibrahim speaking to VOA's Salem Solomon last week. In the third part of our interview with Sudanese-American human rights advocate Azaz Al-Shami, she describes the various scenarios of the possible outcomes to Sudan's protest.
It's just going to keep at it. It's just going to keep with the same momentum. And they're not necessarily in areas where the professional association has already sent out a schedule or something like that. Not only in mosques, even in weddings. You know what I mean? I don't know if you've seen some videos. People in weddings celebrating, and then all of a sudden songs turn into slogans and ethos. You know what I mean? So it seems to be this is what is in the air. This is what people are feeling like. Every time there are five people of them, they will just going to start chanting. And that's more likely so when you are in a prayer, especially if the imam in one way or another tries to justify whatever the government is doing or talks about something that is not related to expensive prices or stuff like that. People would just lash out.
Clearly, there is momentum among the protesters. But ultimately, how do you see this ending?
Well, there are at least three scenarios, though they're not all of them are great and optimistic. One, we're talking about a palace coup where people within the government or in the army decide to take it from Bashir. And that's what Bashir insinuated before. And some of it is like, if you want to come and take it, we'll give it to a military person because he doesn't have any respect for the civilians government, quote unquote. So this is a message, I guess, he was sending that he will give it only to a military person. You know what I mean? Who he trusts, and he thinks that within the hierarchy, they will respect him and will give him a peaceful and a safe way out. So this is one of the scenarios, which is not great. It might give some room, a wiggle room, to have something transitional.
Others would say at least you are getting rid of Bashir.
Yeah, but for the long run, you have no guarantee that this is going to lead to anything. And we have experience right. In the neighboring countries. And the other scenario is it's all going to be within army or military component to it, but this is going to be more bloody. If we're talking about all these peril, like armed group, they can just like try, you know, to fill this void and take over. But they need to be supported from an external actor. And it's very hard to pinpoint or map who would do that. The third one is, which is the hopeful and wishful thinking, is that the government understands with pressure from international community and with promises for some buyout, and they accept to step down and give it to an interim government. You know what I mean? But at this point, the third option does not have a lot of backing. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of people who are talking about it or accepting it because they're waiting to see how it plays out.
That's Sudanese-American human rights advocate Azaz Al-Shami speaking with Carol Van Dam in our VOA studios here in Washington, D.C. last week. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda have produced a movie promoting peace and reconciliation. The actors are refugees from various camps in Uganda. In the movie, local leaders incite their communities to mistreat people from other regions, eventually leading to conflict and bloodshed. They later realize their mistakes and decide to reconcile. The sponsors, the South Sudanese Youth Empowerment Program, say they believe the movie will help teach South Sudanese in and out of the country to live together in peace. Mugube Davis Rockeringe reports for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
Camera rolling.
Rolling.
Sound check.
Checked.
Cut away. Scene one. Take three. Action.
Outside.
Budding film director Martin Nyeko ensures that he and his crew are ready to shoot the movie Unity Among South Sudanese. They are at Chilombe Customs Corner Village in Gulu Municipality of Northern Uganda. In this scene, Sultan Ladu from the Equatorial Region incites his community to mistreat South Sudanese from other regions. He tells his people that foreigners have invaded and are depriving them of resources.
I've come in the name of peace. Ana jabeisi mtasalamu ya kwana. Ana jabeisi mtasalamu. What is our reason for shedding more blood? We come down. There are ways of how we can resolve these issues. Fiteriga ina beda hilu mashakile. Mabe kubudom tan mara. Kuina kubudom ketir kalas.
it takes more pleading from the peacemaker, and eventually both societies agree to live together. The conflict in South Sudan has often taken ethnic undertones. Young South Sudanese refugees from the Chidiandongo, Pagirinya, Nyomanzi settlements are working with compatriots in Gulu to create a movie they hope will help rebuild South Sudan. Sultan Ladu, whose real name is Aleu Moon Awol, fled Jonglei State in 2014 when fighting spread to the area.
Our country has been messed up by tribalism, nepotism, and segregation. So we want to tell the South Sudan in this movie that we have acted that people should come together and unite. They should be peaceful people. So we need to be a united South Sudan, especially by this interim government, which is going to take power for 36 months. So we are acting this movie especially for that government so that it can really change our country.
Another South Sudanese, Busena Ajoba, agrees.
It has brought us to a common understanding. When the conflict broke up by different tribes and regions, then the peacemaker was to bring us into common understanding. Then we have to agree and come into an understanding. And when people fight, they have to come together into a common understanding and be all peacemakers.
Joseph Amanya works for a group called Remembering the Ones We Lost, which, among other things, tries to help South Sudanese who have lost loved ones in the conflict deal with trauma. Amanya acts as a peacemaker in this movie.
The video is sending a stronger message to inform every youth that the path of violence is not a solution. And it is actually also informing the leaders of South Sudan that violence is never a solution to our problem as South Sudanese.
Augustino Deng is the executive director for South Sudan Youth for Peace and Development Organization, which coordinated the shooting of the movie.
Youth are the backbone of the country. A country like South Sudan has about 72% to 75% young people, and we feel that they have been part of conflict and they have been perpetrators to conflict, to how they are being used by our leaders and others. So we feel that it's important if they take a role, they take the responsibility of being actors of peace.
Organizers say the movie will be distributed through various media outlets in the country so it can reach millions of people.
Asan kev mafi zoltan marabe shakil. Asan itumbe community debe community tandan itumbukun gaidin wahid. Mafi faidata shakil. Itum shakil kam sana. Lisa mai hilu mashakil. Waitum kan shakil mabi hilu mashakil. Mashakil mabi hilube mashakil.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji ni Kampala, Uganda.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Get Up by Emmanuel Jell.
They say all walk and no play makes me a dull boy. But you know what I say? I gotta get up. Kids from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes. I make a few dollars sometimes. I'm thinking I'll just have a night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jell with the song Get Up. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Excuse me, my weapon. I'm all good with most people I meet, even if your heart made of concrete.
I know a girl named Tina, nickname Katrina, never walked in a lab, but she rolling in a bin.